It's the Bengal Financial Literacy Show coming up next on KISU FM Radio with our host, Chris Chatwin, professor with the Idaho State University College of Business.
On this month's episode of the Bengal Financial Literacy Podcast, I welcome Carrie Jennings, financial aid counselor here at Idaho State University. Welcome to this month's show of the Financial Literacy Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Chatwin, coming to you from the ISU College of Business. Happy to have with us today Carrie Jennings from ISU. Carrie, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, Carrie, why don't you tell the people who you are and what you do?
Well, as you said, my name is Carrie Jennings. I am a financial aid counselor in the financial aid office here at ISU. I've been a counselor for about 12 years. Prior to that, I worked in the financial aid office or in the scholarship office, total of about 20 years. Started as a work-study student, which is kind of interesting because part of your financial aid package could be work-study. So that's what I started with and then moved on into a full-time position.
Perfect. So you, like me, a proud ISU alum that is happy to be here.
Yes, okay. Very much.
Yeah, I love the university. I love the opportunity that we have to give back, in a sense. I love the opportunity that you and I have right now to be sitting here and for our topic in this month's podcast to be able to talk about financial aid, okay? Scholarships, grants, student loans if necessary, but how we can best help students, whether they're incoming students or current students, kind of prepare for how they're going to pay for this college experience. So, Carrie, maybe where we need to start is, let's start incoming freshmen, for example. Someone has applied to ISU, they're going to be coming here and they're wondering, what are my options for paying for this education?
Well, first off, all incoming freshmen are automatically looked at for scholarships based on their admission application. So if an incoming freshman got their application for admission in by whatever the deadline is, then we're already going to be looking at them for what scholarships they could be eligible for.
So you go through the wide range of scholarships that we have available. You're looking at every incoming freshman, trying to determine, hey, is there something we can give? Is there a scholarship? Is there some money earmarked out there that can help pay for that education?
Right. Yep, we do that. And it's important for the incoming freshman. So while you're a senior, a junior in high school, making sure your GPA is on point. If it's a little low, you always know you have a few semesters to build it and get it up there before you apply for college. And then your test scores, ACT and SAT scores, if they're required. At the time, they're not because of COVID, but that could change back.
Change again.
At any time.
Yeah, so I remember being a high school student, right? It's funny because as a high school student, my thought was, I'm not going to college. You know, why would I go to college? And now, you know, here I am with a couple of bachelor's degrees, a master's, working on a doctorate. School is important. So those incoming freshmen, the junior, the senior especially the juniors, right, at high school level, really need to kind of be taking high school serious because the ACT scores, SAT scores, once those become required again, and your GPA, your grades, can greatly affect your scholarship.
Yes, definitely. A lot of times we'll see students with a high GPA but a low test score, or a high test score and a low GPA. So that kind of tells you there's students out there that maybe not taking school so seriously, so their GPA isn't that great, but they do know the materials, so their test scores are good, but the two together are what get you the scholarships.
Two together get you the scholarships. Okay, so if I haven't been taking my schooling seriously and maybe my GPA isn't where I want it to be, I can kind of redeem myself by studying really hard for those ACT, SAT, and knocking those out of the park to help, right?
Yes, you can. Okay. You can look at the grid that ISU uses to award the scholarships. It's on the scholarship page on the ISU website. So it's one side of the grid has the GPA, the other side has the SAT or ACT scores, and then you just follow your scores to the middle and find out what scholarship you'd be eligible for.
And so those are scholarships, obviously, then based on our grades. I don't want to say merit, but based on, you know, how we've done in school. I assume there's also some scholarships available based on financial need or other factors.
Right. There are. Actually, once you're a continuing student, most of the scholarships you see will have a need component.
Okay.
So you have to have some kind of financial need, and the FAFSA is what determines what that need is.
All right. So you mentioned FAFSA. We better talk about the FAFSA, because that's kind of the all-encompassing, all-important, be-all, end-all of applying for financial aid. What is the FAFSA that everyone is hearing about?
So the FAFSA is an acronym for Free Application for Federal Student Aid. So that's the document. It's all online now, but that's the official applying for federal aid, which could be student loans, Pell Grant, other types of grants, or it's also used, that need component, and also is also used on some scholarships.
Okay, so in the FAFSA, let's break it down then. I'm going to go to school, or I'm in school. I want to apply for some type of financial aid, whether that's a student loan or whether that's a grant of some kind. What is the first step in completing the FAFSA?
So the first step would be just filling out the application online on the Federal Student Aid website. And when you do that, you're going to have, as a student, you're going to have your parents' information until you're the age of 24, you're married or have children of your own or in the active military. Until one of those things happen, you're going to be using your parents' information. So you need taxes, W-2s, Social Security numbers, that type of information. And then when you're filling out the financial part of the FAFSA, where it asks you for your wages and your yearly income, then it's actually looking at 2 years prior.
Okay. So if I'm an incoming freshman, they need my parents' information.
Correct.
Okay. Unless I'm married, active military, and you mentioned if I have children of my own. Okay. So basically, if I'm no longer dependent upon my parents.
Well, that's tricky to say it that way.
It is, isn't it?
There are students that are out there living on their own, paying their own way, but the Department of Education still decided that until you're one of these other things, you're still going to be using your parents' information.
So what if I have no ties to my parents?
There are some exceptions.
Okay.
We always have exceptions for estrangement or parents passing away, things like that.
Okay.
We do have a petition to be an independent student that you can apply for. You still fill out the FAFSA with your information.
Now it's based solely on my information. Am
Correct.
I working and et cetera?
Right. So you send it to us with just your information, and then we will request a petition to be an independent student from you. And then in that petition, you're going to be explaining why you should be considered an independent student, and then providing some references that will write some letters to corroborate the information you're putting down.
Why you are on your own, or why your parents might not have anything associated with you, or whatever it might be there.
Right. And then there's also, in high school, there are the counselors that can identify students who are homeless or at risk of homelessness, or parents that have passed away, things like that. So you always want to make sure you have a high school counselor that knows your situation, too.
Yeah. So, if I'm sitting here listening to this and I'm, a junior or senior in high school, maybe not sure if I'm going to go to school or not, or if I'm going to even be able to afford it, there are some avenues for me to explore.
Yes.
Talking to the counselor, federal student aid, because obviously education is key. I mean, it's important, and therefore we need to find what we can do to make sure it happens. So I fill out the FAFSA, I've got my information, my parents' information. We want that to be accurate, I assume.
Yes. So the FAFSA becomes available October 1st every year for the next academic year. So October's coming up. On the 1st, that FAFSA will be for the 22-23 academic year. So, but anybody still attending now or going in the spring, January, that maybe hasn't filled out a FAFSA, you can still do that for the 21-22 academic year.
Okay, so if I'm in school right now, it's the fall semester, I can fill it out now to still get in, you know, still get some aid for the fall semester. And then if I'm looking towards the spring semester, that becomes available in October. And you mentioned a key point here, looking at income, right? If I'm applying in October, it's October 2021, that's for the 2022 tax or academic year, I'm going to be using tax information from 2020 because I obviously don't have a 2021 tax return yet. What if there's a drastic change in the income?
So when you fill out your FAFSA, you're actually going to be putting the income information for you and your parents from 2 years prior. Mm-hmm. So the FAFSA that opens this October 1st will actually be for the next academic year, which starts in August. The spring will be the current one. But at any point, if things have changed where you're going back 2 years, if things have changed, the parent has changed jobs, you aren't working anymore, or, you know, just something has changed in your financial information, then we can always look at what's going on now. First thing you do, though, is fill out your FAFSA based on what the FAFSA asks. So put in the 2 years prior, no matter what the income was, and then come to the financial aid office after you've been awarded based on the FAFSA. Then you come to us, and we can, through special circumstances, change the FAFSA information to reflect what's going on with either your parents' income now or your income now or both even.
Okay, excellent. Excellent. So I filled out the FAFSA. Let's move forward on that. I filled out the FAFSA and now I've been awarded. Let's just start with, say, Pell Grant. What is a Pell Grant?
So a Pell Grant is just money that you do not have to repay. Any type of a grant, because there's other types of grant as well. Pell is the most common. And that one, you just don't have to repay it. It's money for you for the purpose of getting an education.
That sounds like an excellent deal, right?
Yes.
Money that I don't have to repay. So I'm assuming they're not just going to hand me a check. I assume that will probably go to the university to pay the tuition.
Correct. So you fill out your FAFSA, you get your financial aid award, register for your classes, and then 10 days before the semester begins, as long as we have everything we need from you and your FAFSA is just ready to go or your financial aid award is ready to go, then that money disperses to payment towards your tuition and fees. So if you have grant money and you have, let's say, some scholarship money and you have you're already registered for your classes, you have so much that you owe for tuition and fees, the money disperses over there 10 days before classes start. Anything over and above what you owe the university then will get sent to you, and that's to pay for your books, for your gas, for your living expenses, things like that. Just whatever you need to be a student for a semester.
So it is possible then with that Pell Grant to have some extra money that can help cover other costs besides tuition, food, housing. If everything else has been exhausted first.
Right. I mean, it is possible. Pell Grant doesn't cover the full cost of tuition. It gets pretty close, but it's not the full cost of a full-time tuition. And it can be adjusted. So a lot of times students think they can only get Pell Grant if they're full-time, and that's not correct. You can get Pell Grant even at one credit as long as you're in that eligibility range.
Okay.
And you won't know that unless you fill out a FAFSA.
And so I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Pell Grant will typically increase each year based on cost of living adjustments, et cetera. Right now, just under $6,500 for the year is what is available. So as you mentioned, probably not enough to cover all tuition and books and housing. And so Pell Grant, money that you don't have to pay back, a great thing to get if you've got the financial need for it. But there might be some other things we need to explore as well.
So we're going to award Pell Grant, work study, and student loans. That's what the FAFSA, those are the most common. There are some others, but that's the most common that students are going to see. And if you're getting your Pell Grant, but you still have some tuition to pay, or your Pell Grant and maybe a scholarship has covered all your tuition, but you still need some living expense money, or you got to buy your books and supplies, or if you're in one of the College of Tech programs, you need a kit or a tool, tools that you have to purchase on the first day that are kind of expensive. Then you can go to the student loans. And the student loans, there's a subsidized loan and an unsubsidized loan. The difference between those two are the unsubsidized loan, there's the interest on that loan is going to start accruing as soon as that money disperses to you, whether it's going to pay your tuition or it's going to you to pay for books and supplies or living expenses, that the interest is going to start accruing as soon as that money disperses. The subsidized loan, however, there's no interest accruing on that loan the whole time you're in school. So as long as you're at least a half-time student, which is 6 credits or above, then there'll be no interest on the subsidized loan. So if you're in a spot where you can actually choose which loan you want, you don't need all of it, you just need enough to cover a few more expenses, then just make sure you're taking the subsidized loan first.
Awesome. Okay, so exactly what you said. I'm given the option saying, okay, you can have unsubsidized or subsidized. Better off taking the subsidized because let's just say it's a $3,000 loan. I'm a freshman, I get a $3,000 loan. With the subsidized, that interest is not accruing, meaning it's the balance of that loan is not growing.
Right.
It's a $3,000 loan, and when I graduate or when I am no longer a half-time student, it's still a $3,000 loan. And at that point, interest begins to grow upon it as I'm paying it off, correct?
Right. You have a 6-month grace period before repayment. So either you stop attending or you've graduated. You have a 6-month grace period, then your payments begin. The interest, however, begins to accrue as soon as that last date of attendance has happened.
Okay. So if I hold it, I graduate in May. 6 months later, I have to start making the payments. But starting in May, that $3,000 loan starts to grow. Interest starts to accumulate.
Yes.
And then unsubsidized, as you mentioned, if I choose the unsubsidized or if that's the only option available to me, then let's say it's a $3,000 loan. As soon as it's disbursed to me or goes through the university to pay tuition, it begins to grow. Interest starts to accumulate, correct?
Correct.
So that could be by the time I graduate now, it's no longer a $3,000 loan. It could be, depending on how long I was in school and what the interest rate is, it could be $3,200, $3,300, $3,400.
Right. So. You can pay the interest, though, as you go. A lot of times students will pay the interest from the year prior with their next year's aid or however, just kind of keep the interest down. So that is an option. And you can also repay at any time. So there's no penalty for paying early.
No penalty for an early payment. So if I take a summer job, for example, in between, I could pay down the student loans.
Right.
And I guess that is a good thing to talk about because you mentioned that 6-month grace period. So if I go to school, fall, spring semester, I take the summer off and I come back in the fall, obviously 6 months didn't pass.
Right.
So I don't have to worry about the fact that I'm not in school during the summer. I'm not going to have to start making payments on my student loans, correct?
That's correct. Summer's not your standard semester. So fall, spring would be a standard mm-hmm. semester. So as long as you consecutively attend fall, spring, then your interest will not be accruing, on the subsidized.
On the subsidized.
Correct.
And no payments necessary.
Right.
Now, if, however, I decide in the summer to backpack through Europe and I decide, wow, it's pretty cool over here, I'm going to take a whole semester off of school as well, and that 6 months passes that I'm not a student, I'm going to have to start making payments, correct?
Right. Yes.
Start making payments. Okay, I'm making payments on my student loan. And then I decided this was a fun trip to Europe. This was a fun backpacking that became 6, 7, 8 months. I better go back to school. What happens with my student loan then? Do I still make the payments?
No, then you go on an in-school deferment. As long as you're at least half-time, which is 6 credits, okay, then your loans will go back into an in-school deferment, and no payments, again, will be due until either you stop attending or you've graduated.
Okay, so if I'm in school at least half-time, even if I've taken a break and I've paid student loans and I come back to school, I can go back into deferment where I don't have to make payments on those student loans.
Right, yep.
Obviously not always going to be the case, but right now, for students out there who currently have student loans outstanding, maybe who aren't in school, COVID, okay, coronavirus, I understand there's been an extended deferment on that. There's no necessary payments on student loans right now. Is that still in place?
That is. And actually, there's no interest right now either. So there's 0% interest accruing on student loans, and no payments are due at the moment either.
So even if I had an unsubsidized loan, right now because of coronavirus, the interest is frozen on it, the balance is frozen, I don't have to make payments until they decide, hey, whether we're out of the woods or what happens, okay, now you can start making payments again.
Yeah. January 31st of 2022 is when it's supposed to, that deferment is supposed to end. But it came to that in September, and then they extended it. So we don't really know what's going to happen until it comes to that.
Yeah, we don't want to sit here and hope for continued student loan deferment, because that would mean that we're still struggling with COVID. But for a lot of people out there, that probably is a nice relief from,
yes,
student loans.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the things I've cautioned individuals on, because there's so much talk about student loan forgiveness. Is the government going to forgive our student loans? One of the things I've cautioned students on is, before taking out student loans, make sure you know your plan. Know what you want to study, or at least have kind of a path. And take out those student loans because they're going to help you get from point A to point B. Certainly don't take out a student loan with the expectation that it's all going to be forgiven, because you might find yourself in a situation where you have a loan you might not have needed and you've got to pay it back, because there's no certainty in that loan forgiveness.
That's true. And things change in government, as we all know.
All the time, yeah.
And so things like student loan forgiveness that are like the public service loan forgiveness, and then there's teachers loan forgiveness. There's a few others. You know, the government can decide, or Congress can decide at any point, that they want to change something, and you know, something you might have been hoping for all along doesn't come to pass once you actually get to that point. So just make sure you know, like you said, make sure students know that they need this money. It's an investment in their future. So using it isn't necessarily a terrible thing to do, to have loans, as long as you're keeping it in perspective that this is an investment for my future self and my future employment. And at some point, I'm going to make enough money to be able to pay this back.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to think about it. It's an investment in yourself, right? And so in your role as a financial aid counselor, I assume you're meeting with students, you know, here's your loan options. Let us help you understand what's going to come to pass with these loans.
Right. When we make your financial aid award, we have to give you everything you're eligible for. So we're giving you the maximum yearly amount that you are eligible for. You don't have to take it, though. And some students actually just think they just have to take whatever they've been given. Mm. And that's not true. If you've been offered $5,000 in a loan, but you only need $1,000, you can change that amount. You can call us. We can change that amount. If you take out the whole $5,000 and then halfway through the semester, you realize, okay, I don't really need all of this anymore. I thought I might, but I don't. You can pay it back to the university, and we will send it back to the Department of Ed for you while you're in that semester, or at any point when you're in another semester. You can always, like I said before, start repaying on those loans also.
And I think that's just some really sound financial advice. One of my beliefs is that personal finance is more personal than it is finance. And it seems that we see all the time, whether maybe it's buying a house. Hey, you qualify for this much. Oh, okay, so I'm going to go buy a house that's exactly that much because that's what they said I qualify for. Or, hey, you qualify for this much student loan. Oh, okay, I guess I'll take it all. But sometimes we need to sit there and reflect and go, what's best for my situation? What can I reasonably handle as far as repayment? And so I like that you've brought that point up, that you don't have to take it all.
Right, yes. You can, yeah, you have that option. And really, in the end, if you think about it, it's a difference between maybe a $100 a month payment or a $500 a month payment or even more
huge.
Than that.
Yeah, and that's huge. Well, with a little bit of time we have, I just want to talk real quick about the BOSS system that we have here at ISU. What is that BOSS system for anyone?
So the BOSS system is the Bengal Online Scholarship System. You can find that in your Bengal web. That is ISU's own search engine for scholarships. So all the scholarships that we offer throughout all the different colleges, departments, outside sources, they are all in the BOSS system. So as a student, you're going to go into there, you're going to fill out your profile, tell it who you are, what's your major, things like that. And then as scholarships come open, you're going to get an email that tells you this scholarship just opened and it looks like you might qualify for it. You still have to go and apply for it. You still have to check all the qualifications because it may not know every single detail. So it may be something they say you're eligible for, but maybe there is something you're not. But and for the most part, it's just going to tell you and send you an email whenever something comes open that you could apply for. So it's huge to us at ISU. It's a great asset.
Yeah, that sounds like a fantastic tool. I mean, if you're a student here at Idaho State University, I think you really need to get on that. You need to be exploring every possible option for having help with your education, with paying for that education, and that scholarship, like the grant, right, does not need to be repaid.
Right.
So, well, Carrie, thank you so much for being here with us. I know it's very helpful to students and maybe even not students, prospective students, or even those that are sitting here wondering, hey, what's going on with my student loans right now in this time of COVID? So some great things to think about for anyone about how they're going to pay for school, how they're going to pay off their student loans. Carrie, I appreciate you being here. And please go see Carrie. Get on that BOSS system. Get help with the FAFSA and make sure you stay current on all of it.
Bengal Financial Literacy Show, hosted by ISU's Chris Chatwin, can be heard on the second Monday of every month at 7 p.m. here on KISU. You can also hear this or all past episodes of the program at kisu.org/programs.